The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone and a warm welcome along to the Punt Podcast brought to you by William Hill in association with the FWA. We're looking ahead to the FA Cup final on this edition. It's Chelsea versus Manchester United going toe-to-toe for some silverware at Wembley on Saturday. We'll also be discussing the England squad, which of course was announced on Wednesday. Gareth Southgate has penned down his 23-man squad for Russia, plus the reserves as well. We'll be getting reaction on the England squad announcement as well as a preview of the FA Cup final. Sam Norris here and presents his chair this week, and joining me, two men on the line, starting with an absolute stalwart of this podcast, Derek McGovern, joining us live from Italy. Have your recent spate of winning naps paid for this trip to Italy, Derek?
And yes, they have. And if that doesn't sicken people enough listening in rainy England, well, I travelled here first class, without kids. So all is well.
Good stuff. Yeah, it was a nice nap last week with Newcastle getting the job done against the lacklustre Chelsea. We'll talk about them later on in the podcast, but that must have been satisfying, not only to win the nap, Derek, but to win in such style.
Well, I have to say, I had the law on my side, the law of averages, because I'd been having a terrible run until then. So it was just I was due a winner.
Yeah, turning it round at just the right time. And joining myself and Derek on the podcast, our FWA guest this week, delighted to have Martin Lipton, Deputy Head of Sports at The Sun, on the line with us as well. How are you, Martin?
I'm extremely well, enjoying the Wembley sunshine. It's lovely.
Yeah, I thought I was jealous of Derek being in Italy, but you're in an even more enviable position at this moment in time.
Yes, my backside is perched on what I believe is going to be Jose Mourinho's seat in the front row of the Manchester United Wembley dugout. There's only three seats, and I've taken the one which I think is going to be Mourinho's. We'll find out. If it isn't his, it'll be Rui Faria's, which is not quite as illustrious. Yeah. But it's a lovely day. The pitch looks great, and we'll see how the game turns out on Saturday.
Good stuff. I can't decide which one of you I'm more jealous of in your current position. I'm looking out at a rather dreary Yorkshire skyline where I am. Let's start with the England squad though, first of all, chaps. As mentioned at the top of the podcast, Gareth Southgate has announced his 23-man squad that's going to go to Russia. I'm sure everybody has seen the squad by now. Derek, we'll start with you. There's always going to be a disagreement when any international squad is announced. Everyone, including probably ourselves, thinks they know better than the manager. Any obvious glaring omissions or indeed eyebrow-raising inclusions for you, first of all?
Well, I mean, there's one. It won't surprise inclusion. I mean, there's always a shock caller for the England World Cup squad every year. In 66, Martin Peters came from nowhere, remember? In 2002, Darius Vassell came from nowhere. And in 2006, Theo Walcott came from school. this year, it's the turn of Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's the only player of the World Cup with more letters in his name, by the way, than years in his life. Like 19 years old, had a fantastic season for Liverpool. And I suppose, you know, his inclusion is great news for, you know, young players. You've had a good season. The old stages would say, well, you can't have him. He's only 19. He has to have the experience. But this is a guy who helped Liverpool reach the Champions League final. He deserves his place. The surprise omission to me is Adam Lallana not being in the first 23. People say, yeah, he hasn't played enough because of injury. But, you know, turning on his head, the big moan every World Cup, England players go there too tired. Well, this is a guy who'll be a fresh player, and he's a talent. He'd be in the first 11 fully fit, so I'd have taken him without doubt.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Something I wanted to mention a little bit later on, but I'll come to it now as well, is there too much of a recency bias when people talk about who they'd have in the England squad, too much of a reliance on who's currently on form in the Premier League, or indeed who's had the best season leading directly up to the tournament? It doesn't mean that players like Lallana have lost the ability, they've just been injured this season. Is there too much emphasis put on who's had a good year leading up to the tournament?
Well, you've got to go on something, I suppose. You'd understand the manager picking the men in form, but we've seen enough examples in the past of he'll pick a player because he's done it for England, even though we might be painfully out of form at Premier League level. I think what we're waiting for now, between now and the big kickoff, is for someone to break his metatarsal, yeah, because that always happens to an England player. Given Adam Lallana's luck, he's waiting for an England player to do it. so he can fit in. But it'll probably be his method, so as well it goes.
Yeah, he's on the reserve list, of course, the standby list. And Martin, same question to you, I suppose. Any surprises in that squad? Is it defensive?
Well, I think it's fine. I mean, it's very hard to quibble. If the biggest issue is whether an unfit Adam Lallana, who the manager would love to have had in the squad, genuinely wanted him in, just doesn't think he's anywhere near fit enough, or Jonjo Shelvey should be in, then there's not too many issues, are there? You could make an argument for Bertrand rather than Young, perhaps, and you could suggest that maybe he could have gambled on someone like Sessegnon. But in reality, there weren't too many decisions to make. Had Winks and Gomez and Oxlade-Chamberlain all been fit, I think they would have been in. It would have been a different squad, but they're not. So, therefore, you pick what's available, and I don't think it's that difficult to justify every selection he's made.
Okay. Given that, depending on where exactly you see Ashley Young and Fabian Delph playing, what do you say to the people who suggest that this squad is overly defensive? I think you can sort of, depending on, again, where you play players, you can add up about 11 defenders in this squad with maybe a lack of creativity in the midfield. Is that a fair argument?
Well, we're playing a back five, so you need more defenders. By its very nature. And yes, Dyer isn't a defender. He's a midfielder who can drop in. Different thing. You've got two out-and-out wing-backs in the squad, in Trippier on the right, in Trippier and Alexander-Arnold. Walker is going as a centre-half who can play right-back, who can carry the ball. He's going to be the right-sided starting centre-half, it seems. So they've only got five centre-halves for three positions. That's one injury, one suspension, and that's your three. You know, you could always drop Dyer in there, but so I don't think it's an overbalance. And you may argue there's not brilliant ball playing creativity in the middle of the field, but the setup, the way they want to play, doesn't design for that. In fact, you know, he wants to play with pace on the counter. He wants the ball played into the striker and the second line, which I suspect will be Dele Alli and Raheem Sterling behind Harry Kane, and with the wing-backs pushing on to create. That gives you, if one of Henderson, Stroke, Dyer joins, you've got six attackers on the pitch then.
Yeah, you'll be better placed to answer this question than I am, or even to speak about it, but do you get the impression that Gareth Southgate has got a very, very clear idea in his mind about the system that he wants to play and the players that he wants in that system, given the formation that we've seen him utilise in the last few friendlies? Arguably more so than perhaps his predecessors, he seems very clear in this is the system that he wants to play in, and he's perhaps picked players to fit that system, I suppose, which you can't really criticise the manager for.
No, I think he's right. He decided he wanted to move away from a back four. He thought that a back three was more progressive, that it allows you to utilise the strength of your wing backs and also I think to a degree of it the relationship between so many players from the same club. You're going to have four or five Spurs players in the starting team, two or three City players in the starting team. Well, that's most of your side. And then you've got maybe one Liverpool player. So you're only looking at a handful of players from outside those clubs.
I know you've been speaking to Gareth Southgate this morning at Wembley. Just from what I've seen on social media, he's been facing questions already dealing with specific players who've missed out, the likes of Joe Hart and Jack Wilshere amongst them. What were his reactions this morning?
Well, it was the obvious thing. He just justified his decisions. He thinks that Joe Hart's not played well enough. He didn't want to take him as a third choice. He wasn't going to play when he hasn't deserved it on form. Nick Pope has been excellent this year. He goes as third goalkeeper, unlikely to play, but still goes. Jack Wilshere, as you said, he played quite well over Christmas. He hasn't played so well since, rarely fit. He lacks that little bit of pizzazz and pace that he once had. I think it would have been harder to justify putting him in than leaving him out.
Okay, fair point. Derek, I'll come to you then. Gareth's obviously given a chance to you, seems to have his formation nailed down. How far can this England side go?
Well, if they get out of the group, it will be a plus for me. I think.
Really?
I can't remember a West England squad for World Cup squad for about 4 years. I tell you what, if you take the 23 out, let's just say all 23 were injured and couldn't go, and you have to pick another 23, I'd argue that it wouldn't be much worse than what we've got now. I don't think there's any superstars in there, and I really can't see them doing anything. If we do get a top, it's an easy group. They should get out of it, but we've said that so often about England. I just don't see it. I've got no hopes whatsoever for them. And if they get to the first knockout stage, well, they'll have done well for me.
there's the potential that they could get a winnable game in that first knockout stage as well. The likes of Colombia or Poland look the two obvious ones.
Yeah, that's
that they
winnable for Colombia and Poland.
Very true. I think it's a fair point that you've probably touched on, though, there, Derek. It's probably a shallower pool of talent that the England managers had to choose from for some years, really. You wonder how many of this side would get into what was supposed to be the golden generation of 10, 12 years ago.
Well, you wonder how many would get in. The last time we did anything at the World Cup was 1990, remember, when we got to the semi-final, and we were shocking in many of the early matches then. I honestly don't think there's a single player in that 23, or wherever the first 11 is when they kick off. I don't think there'll be a single player that would have got in that 1992.
Okay. Could you make a case for Harry Kane?
No, because we're better strikers. Harry Kane's a great player. He's the shining light of England right now, but he wouldn't have got in there.
Okay, and Martin, same sort of question to you as well. What sort of chances do you give the three lines in Russia now that we're clear on the personnel?
Look, there's no excuse for not getting out of the group. They're playing Tunisia and Panama. If they don't beat those, and Tunisia are better than people think, but they're still not great. They haven't got great ambition. We don't deserve to be at the tournament. We're better than that. We play one from Senegal, Colombia, Japan and Poland in the last 16. Again, just if you play, you know, that's all right. And then you get beat by Brazil or Germany in the quarterfinals. That for me is a realistic appraisal of where they are. They should get to the last eight. I'd be disappointed if they didn't reach it. I'd be surprised if they went beyond that.
Okay. And a final point on this before we move on to the FA Cup final. Again, this one is for you, Martin. When you've been interviewing Gareth Southgate, how does Gareth Southgate, the man, sort of stack up compared to his predecessors? What's he like as an interview candidate?
I'm incredibly biased when it comes to Gareth. I've known him for a number of years. I was his ghostwriter at Euro 96, which is
okay.
an awfully long time ago. I have huge respect and regard for him as a man, as a footballer, as a manager. I think he's got huge attributes. Which outweigh any of the negatives. I think he's a terrific fella. I think he will improve England. I think he's calm as well. I remember being at the Roy Hodgson press conferences when he announced his squads, and he was edgy and he was tense. I didn't sense any tension at all today with Gareth. He was very composed, very calm, bit of humour. Just a man who wanted to get it out of the way, and he's done that, but he feels he's done everything right. He feels he's gone about his business in the correct way. And he's confident that those players will give as good an account of themselves as they can and not let themselves down. And that's a positive in itself.
On to the FA Cup final then, which is obviously the big game of football to come up this weekend. A 5:15 kickoff at Wembley. Chelsea taking on Manchester United. Chelsea are 2-1. The draw is there at 21-10. And Manchester United priced up at 7-4 for this one. It's been a little bit of a lacklustre season for both sides in a way. Certainly more so for Chelsea. But an opportunity for both sides to sign off this season with a bit of silverware here. This will be the eighth meeting between the two sides at Wembley. That's the most played fixture at the stadium. Both sides have won two apiece in normal time, with three of the meetings going to penalty shootouts, United winning two and Chelsea winning one. So history tells us that this ought to be a pretty evenly matched affair. That's also reflected in the betting. Derek, we'll come to you first of all. Not too much to separate them in the betting here. Manchester United, the slight favourites. They both won a game apiece in the Premier League this season. What's your view here?
Well, it's always hard to pick a winner on Cup Final Day, but this year I've absolutely no doubt who it'll be. Meghan Markle. That's for the game itself. I can't pick a winner. You know, I've looked at it every which way. I've tried to get an argument for both sides. And the only argument I come down on for Manchester United this is, and it's a weak argument, is that Jose Mourinho sees the Cup Finals an awful lot better than Antonio Conte does, the Chelsea manager. Not that Conte's been in that many. I think he's only been in a couple. But remember, he got to the final last year with an all-conquering Chelsea side that had just won the league. He was playing an Arsenal side in Stevie Klein and lost that. So, you know, that's not great form to look at. I think Mourinho's won about 12 of the 14 Cup Finals he's been in. And he seems to collect trophies. I mean, he wasn't so long ago he was counting the Community Shield as a trophy on his Hall of Fame. So this is a man that doesn't care. It doesn't matter how unimportant they are. He'll count it as a trophy. To be honest, it's an FA Cup final, despite having two of the big six in. That leaves me a bit cold. That's how bad the FA Cup has become these days. In fact, I think I'd rather watch the Royal Wedding. I'm not even getting a day off for that.
I was just about to pose that question to you. Will you potentially be watching the Royal Wedding instead of this one?
Well, if the Cup Finals is going to be as bad as I think it will be, I might do. We know this isn't going to be a Liverpool v Manchester City game, is it? You know how Mourinho's going to be setting up, because he always does.
against the big teams, and it's not as if Conte is the most attacking-minded manager of all time. It's interesting that in the last 14 years, only one cup final has been won by a margin of greater than one goal. That was when Arsenal pulverised Aston Villa 4-0. So there are either draws or winners by one goal, and I'm going to go for United to win by the slenderest of margins in 90 minutes. I think you get a decent price for that.
Okay, United to win the match by exactly one goal is 3-1. If you go on the match handicap tie betting, 3-1 for Manchester United to win by one goal exactly. Could be a low-scoring affair. Under 2.5 is there at 1-2. Under 1.5 is priced up at 7-4. Worth mentioning Olivier Giroud as well, who's got a real love affair with this competition. He's been directly involved in 22 goals in his 26 appearances in the FA Cup. That's more than any other player since he made his debut in the competition. He's also scored or assisted in his 3 appearances in the final to date, with assists in 2014 and 2017, and he scored a goal in the 2015 final. So he's a man that loves this competition. Martin, your thoughts on the cup final this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting game in terms of the disappointing season both sides have had need to be abated, and this is a final chance of redemption for both, albeit that one manager will be here next season and the other one won't. Whatever happens, win or lose, Conte's gone. We know that. Mourinho will stay. I just think the fact that the Chelsea players seem to have suddenly stopped playing for Conte completely because there's nothing to prove for him is hard to get out of on a one-off basis. I think that's going to be a big issue. United have still got to please the manager because he's here next year and he's a bit of a tyrant at the best of times. Chelsea played so poorly in the last couple of games. I think that they may struggle to raise their game. United haven't played well, but they've got Lukaku probably back. They've got Sanchez, who seems to be finding his feet again, is a very good player and likes playing at Wembley. He scored pretty much every time he's played here for Arsenal and United. And I think that United just have too much for them.
It's a good point well made there as well about this group of players and not potentially playing for the manager anymore. We saw this group of players do that with Mourinho, who by all accounts was a Chelsea legend. Conte is not going to go down in the same vein that Mourinho has, and the players stopped playing for Mourinho. So are they going to be motivated to play for Conte? And I think this group of players, Martin, they do seem at times to be able to shirk the affair, and when they're not playing for their manager, it's very obvious.
Well, they had that terrible run, didn't they, when they got done by Bournemouth and Watford in the space of a week and played awfully, and they were getting badly beaten by teams. Then they had a spurt around the Cup semi-final, and they, you know, after they lost to Spurs, they came back into it. But, you know, for a team that mocks other clubs for putting on the pressure, when they put on the pressure, they fell apart themselves against Huddersfield. And I thought they've been decidedly ordinary all season. It goes back to the fact that last July the manager should have gone because he didn't want to stay. He had no interest in staying at Chelsea, and they kept him on because they couldn't find anybody else that late in the day more than anything else. This ridiculous new contract, which really wasn't a new contract, just means that they got another a year out of him by giving him a slight pay rise. It didn't help anyone. Everyone knew there were issues. They haven't been altered, haven't been explained, haven't been sorted. And if you've got that going on in the background, it's unsurprising that you end up with an underachieving season.
Who do you think is the most likely man to come in for Chelsea if, as you say, it looks for all the world now as though Conte is going to be leaving his position?
I still suspect it's Luis Enrique, but it wouldn't shock me if they went back to Carlo Ancelotti.
OK. Yeah, Carlo Ancelotti in years gone by has been the man to come in and smooth things over, not only at Chelsea, at other clubs as well. Martin, your final thoughts then on the FA Cup final. Are you leaning more towards Manchester United here?
Yeah, I am. I think it will be a United win. I think, hopefully, both teams will score. I think I can see it being 2-1 to United.
OK. Manchester United to win the game by 2-1 is 10-1 in the betting. If you just want to play Manchester United to win with both teams to score, that's priced up at 5-1. And Derek, the final say goes to you on this one. No need for a nap as such this week, but a best bet in the FA Cup final.
Under 2.5 goals, I think it's a certainty. It's not going to be one for the purists, this. And if I get probably on a correct score, I'll go for United 1, Chelsea 0, in brackets, Lingard, 56.
OK, good
close
stuff.
Brackets.
Yeah. If you manage to pull that off, Derek, it'll be the absolute pinnacle of the season if you get it.
I've had a tip.
Under 2.5, incidentally, is 1-2. Under 1.5 is 7-4. And if you want to follow Derek in with the correct scoreline there, play Manchester United to win by 1-0. That's priced up at 6-1. You can check out all the enhanced odds on the William Hill website. All the hashtag your odds are there as well. If there's something you fancy in the FA Cup final but you don't see it on the website, simply tweet at William Hill with the hashtag your odds, and our traders will do their very best to price it up for you. Thank you very much for your company, Martin. chatting. It's been an absolute pleasure, and enjoy the FA Cup final.
Yourself, thanks a lot.
And same to you, Derek. Thanks for your company throughout the course of the season. We'll have one more podcast out of you as well, I think, ahead of the small match of the Champions League final.
Yes, the big one.
Indeed. See you soon. Cheers, Derek. We'll speak then. Thanks, chaps.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.